ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
So during a little period where Phil's away and you've got me on Nightlife, I thought every night around this time, we're going to have a bit of a chat, a call-in, a check-in with some of the fantastic, incredibly skilled political reporters from right around the country and just sort of break down what have been the top stories to come out of the states and cities where they are for this glorious year of 2025 as we say goodbye to it. Tonight, catching up with Adam Langenberg, who is ABC state political reporter in Hobart. And Adam, thank you so much for making a bit of time to have a chat on Nightlife.
No worries at all.
It's funny, this year we've talked a lot about tumultuous politics. I think maybe Tasmania would know that better than any other state, thanks to your no confidence vote.
Yeah, absolutely. I keep making a joke that I think we need a new bumper sticker in Tasmania, the election state. But they keep coming early. We've had one in 2021 earlier than scheduled, one in 2024 earlier than scheduled, and then one a year later in July this year. And that all came about because of a no-confidence motion, which you talked about. There were three key reasons for that, that Labor leader Dean Winter, who's no longer the Labor leader, but we'll get onto that in a little bit, he raised as the motion of no confidence as the trigger. So the first was the state of the budget, which we'll go into a little bit further as well, the handling of the new births for the Spirit of Tasmania, which I talked about last year, and then a government's plan to sell government business enterprises. So that motion was tabled in Parliament. Enough crossbenchers supported it that the government ended up imploding, and then Premier Jeremy Rockliffe wouldn't stand down and Labor wouldn't try and govern on their own with the support of the Greens and the crossbench. So we headed off to another election campaign. And it felt a bit like deja vu because when you have an election that's caused by, you know, the state of the budget, no one really wants to spend much money. It was pretty low profile. Everyone had fatigue. Voters didn't really want the election. Politicians didn't really want the election either. It was, yeah, a pretty sort of drab, haphazard affair. And then what we had at the end of the election was basically the same parliament that we did beforehand. So there were still 14 Liberals, still 10 members of the Labor Party, still 5 Greens, and then just the real change was the 6 crossbenchers in terms of independents and minor parties. So the Jackie Lambie network completely imploded and sort of ended up with a more progressive crossbench, and that's what the parliament looked like after the election. And then it started this real period. Sorry, Nick.
It started this real period
of who's going to form power in Tasmania, because 14 is not enough to govern on your own. You need to get to 18. And then there was that real squabbling of who's going to be able to form government from there.
I've got to say, a fascinating time to be in your role, but you must have been getting fatigued by it all as well, not just the average Tasmanian.
Absolutely. Once we got to the other end of, because Labor said there were going to be a no confidence motion where they'd try and form government, they'd move a motion of no confidence again in the government and try and then move a motion of confidence in their government. So they were trying to get the numbers. Once that was done, I went immediately to Europe for as long as possible. just fatigue of all of it. So I needed the relaxation. But the outcome in the end, the Liberals made some concessions to win the crossbench over, which were crucial. They promised to phase out greyhound racing by 2029. They launched a review into salmon operations in Tasmania. It was enough to get the crossbench to side with the Liberals and have them continue in power. They've been in power here in Tasmania since 2014. So they were able to continue on. And Labor, who didn't move and wouldn't concede, remained in opposition and now have new leadership under Josh Willey instead of Dean Winter.
How do you feel that's flowing with the average punter on the street? How do you think they've reacted to all this up and down?
Well, I think during the election campaign and the no confidence motion, everyone you talked to went, what are we doing? Why are we here? What's happening? And now it's whatever happens, can it just last for as long as possible, please? We don't want another early election. So there's a lot of onus on the politicians, and it's still precarious going forward because all minority governments are, but there's a lot of onus on the politicians that they've got to make this work for the long term. And it's not about political gains and no confidence motions in early elections again. It has to be about getting this through for good outcomes and also to ensure that the next election is actually done closer to a scheduled date.
I've got to say, I think I remember one of your colleagues on the live blog signing off after all this with something along the lines of Tasmania has a government, enjoy it while it lasts, which may sum up how everyone's feeling at the moment. Just talk to me about the Jackie Lambie implosion, because I would have thought that that was a surprise to people.
It was. So what happened were three members of the Jackie Lambie network ended up elected at the 2024 state election. But by the end of 2024, two of those members had quit the party and moved to be independents. And a third, Andrew Jenner, stayed in the party. But when there was that snap election earlier this year, was then disendorsed from the party because it ceased to exist. Jackie Lambie said, I'm not running any more candidates at state election level. I'm just going to focus on federal politics. So that's where the Jackie Lambie network is now. And then Andrew Jenner, who was a member of the Jackie Lambie network, went to run as a national, as did one of those other candidates who'd gone and run as an independent as well. So it all split in lots of different directions, but there were no successful Nationals MPs. There are no JLN MPs in Parliament, but there is a Shooters, Fishers and Farmers MP, Carlo De Falco. He's the first one in Tasmania's history, and they're the real beneficiary of that implosion of the Jackie Lambie network.
Adam Langenberg is ABC state political reporter in Hobart. And Adam, it kind of rolls us into the next thing I wanted to ask you, but how much of all of this division that you've seen do you think was stadium related?
I mean, the stadium's been a huge driver of division in the wider community in Tasmania for quite a while, ever since former Premier Peter Gutwin said, this is what I want to do and it's going to get us into the AFL. The community of Tasmania has been divided about it. And it's been a huge issue politically. It wasn't a trigger for the early election, though, although it has definitely meant that some members of the progressive crossbench, they think that getting rid of a stadium is the biggest thing. When we were talking about jockeying to try and form government, the easiest thing that the Liberals or Labor could have done and sort of guaranteed a fair number of votes is, okay, we'll get rid of the stadium idea, and that would have helped. But that wasn't where the tea leaves ended up going. Both major parties have been in lockstep for the last little while that they're supportive of this stadium project going forward. As you said, we've been talking about it for a long time. Mm. There was a Planning Commission report that was handed down earlier this year. It was really scathing of the project and said that it shouldn't go ahead. But the government, as they have throughout this whole process, proceeded anyway. The price tag now is out to $1.13 billion, which is up from the initial estimate of $715 million at the site. So we've seen a big sort of growth in the scope of that. And things really came down to the wire in the end. It sailed through the lower house, and then in the upper house, which is dominated by independents here in Tasmania, it really came down to the wire. There was a multi-day debate, you might remember, from earlier in the month. It feels like it was a long time ago, but earlier this month. And it just got through the upper house, 9-5 in the end. But the government had to make some concessions, and some of those were capping the cost to taxpayers. So that if this price tag of $1.13 billion expands any further, the state government either has to go and get more funding from private investors, the AFL or the federal government, who've already tipped in some money to the project, or they have to scale it down. So come up with a cheaper stadium proposal going forward. So that's one of the commitments they've made that really sort of hamstrings them going forward, and be really interesting to see when this stadium's going to be ready to go and how much it's actually going to cost.
Oh, my gut feeling would be that $1.13 billion blows out before the end of it's over. Look, on TV, we'll often see so many devil supporters out, sort of, you know, our stadium, we need this. How much of that is genuine grassroots, and how much of that is a bit of formulated agitation?
Oh, I think it's mostly grassroots. Good. If you went around and grabbed 100 Tasmanians and said, how many of you think Tasmania should be in the AFL? You'll get 90 to 95 of them who will say, absolutely, we should be part of the AFL. Tasmania is an AFL state. This is where we should be. That's, you know, not the question. The question then is what price is the right price to be able to achieve that? And in lots of people's minds, building a new stadium on the waterfront when they view that we already have two acceptable football stadiums, one at Belrive and one in Launceston at York Park, is the too high a price given, you know, the budget constraints in Tasmania, the issues being faced by the health and education systems. So that's really what it boiled down to, rather than a question about whether we should be in the AFL, which everyone is roughly on board with.
Well, while we're talking about those dollar figures, it takes us into the third thing I wanted to talk to you about. One of the two major credit ratings agencies downgrading Tassie's credit rating. It's now made it, I believe, the worst rated of any Australian state, the Moody Blues, as we so often call it. How's the feeling?
So Standard & Poor's actually followed suit a week later as well. So both credit rating agencies have downgraded Tasmania's credit rating. We did expect that after the last state budget, which is handed down by former Treasurer Guy Barnett, they both came out with negative forward outlook. So we did expect that this is where it was heading, and that's where it has. The budget, as we talked about before, was one of those key drivers for the early election. The state government said it learnt its lesson. It established a multi-partisan budget panel to talk about ways to fix the budget going forward. It replaced former Treasurer Guy Barnett with Eric Abetz, a long-serving politician in the federal parliament who's now in state parliament here in Tasmania. So Eric Abetz is in charge of the finances. He said everything's on the table. He handed down an interim budget this year, but says the real heavy lifting will be in May going forward. Now, just for some of the scale as to what happened in Tasmania and why that early election was linked to the budget, the debt, it was four straight years of fiscal deficits that were forecast by Guy Barnett, and then also debt spiralling out to $10.8 billion by 2028-29, which is a lot for a small state like Tasmania, which has an operating budget of $8.5 to $9 billion. So, and those figures, according to the pre-budget outlook, were actually supposed to be worse than that. So we'll wait and see how it goes, but debt remains a really big trigger issue in Tasmania, and the government has said that it will take measures to fix that. It's softened its language on introducing new taxes going forward, and it has said that we're going to have to tighten our belts here on the Apple Isle. What that actually looks like in reality, we don't know, but we'll find out in May. I don't expect that people will be thrilled with Eric Abetz's first real budget, though.
Then, Adam, you, along with a lot of people, just keeping your fingers crossed that you'll make it through to mid-2029 before the next election?
Oh, as long as it's not in 26, I think I'm happy, Nick. That's a win, isn't it?
Adam, mate, thank you so much for having some time for us this evening.
No worries at all. Thanks so much.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.